This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home, so let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So last night's debate offered some more substance than the night before, but unfortunately the substance was on things almost completely highlighting how out of touch the Democrats are with the American public. We're not talking about simple things that people legitimately are undecided on. We're talking about things that have been polled over and over and over again, clearly showing the American public is not in favor. One of those issues last night that they talked about is crossing the border and whether or not it should be decriminalized. Now, kudos to Joe Biden, because when Joe Biden is moderate Joe Biden on this topic, he has a good line in that he doesn't want people coming here illegally. He wants to go after criminals who are coming here illegally, but he wants to do everything else in a quote-unquote humane way. Now, if you're a Democrat who's a moderate or an independent, you listen to something like that, you're like, okay, I can get behind that.
In addition to that, we're in a circumstance where if, in fact, you say you can just cross the border, what do you say to all those people around the world who, in fact, want the same thing to come to the United States and make their case, but they don't, that they have to wait in line? The fact of the matter is, you should be able to, if you cross the border illegally, you should be able to be sent back. It's a crime. It's a crime.
Democrats and Republicans and independents overwhelmingly agree with that point. If you try to cross the border illegally, you should be charged with a crime and or simply deported. That is a position the American people overwhelmingly support. What they don't support are the open border nonsense coming from Bill de Blasio, coming from Julian Castro. In fact, Castro goes after, of all people, Don Lemon, who's an embarrassment. He considers himself a reporter or a journalist. He is not. He goes after Don Lemon for using, quote unquote, right-wing talking points about open borders.
If you elect me president, you're not electing me to follow. You're electing me to lead. And open borders is a right-wing talking point. And frankly, I'm disappointed that some folks, including some folks on this stage, have taken the bait. The only way that we're going to guarantee that we don't have family separations in this country again is to repeal Section 1325 of the Immigration Nationality Act. That is the law that this president, this administration, is using to incarcerate migrant parents and then physically separate them from their children. My immigration plan would also make sure that we put undocumented immigrants who haven't committed a serious crime on a pathway to citizenship, that we do a 21st century Marshall Plan with Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala so that we can get to the root of this challenge So people can find safety and opportunity at home instead of having to come to the United States. That's how we can be smarter, more effective, and more humane when it comes to immigration policy.
Thank you, Secretary Castro.
So he doesn't support open borders, but he doesn't want to charge people criminally who try to come here illegally. That's literal open borders. If you're not going to charge people, then you do not need a border at all. And if you don't need a border at all, what does that mean? You support open borders. Now, Bill de Blasio went after the Obama administration. And a lot of folks on TV, all the progressive pundits, were noticing that for whatever reason, the crew up there spent a lot of time going after Obama, of all people. We'll get into why in a second. But here's Bill de Blasio going after Obama and Biden and their record on deportation.
Yeah, I agree with the congressmember, but I don't hear an answer from the vice president. I'm confused. I asked the vice president point blank, did he use his power to stop those deportations? He went right around the question. Mr. Vice President, you want to be President of the United States. You need to be able to answer the tough questions. I guarantee you, if you're debating Donald Trump, he's not going to let you off the hook. So did you say those deportations were a good idea? Or did you go to the president and say, this is a mistake, we shouldn't do it? Which one?
Now, here, by the way, Joe Biden monumentally screws up a response. Because here's what he should say. He should say, no, I supported the deportations because we have to have some level of law and order at our borders. We cannot allow people to come here illegally. We should allow people to go through the asylum process. Here's how I would change it. We should clearly make it so that it's a little bit easier to come into this country the legal way. Here's how I change it. But this is how he answers.
I was vice president. I am not the president. I keep my recommendation in private. Unlike you, I expect you would go ahead and say whatever was said.
And by the way, that's a weak burn. That's not a good burn. Unlike you, I keep secrets.
Privately with him? That's not what I do. What I do say to you is he moved to fundamentally change the system. That's what he did. That's what he did. But much more has to be done. Much more has to be done.
I still don't hear an answer.
Senator Booker?
Yeah, and you know what? He didn't get an answer. He didn't get an answer at all, except to say, oh, well, I was the VP at the time, so I didn't really have any power. That's your response? That's a horrible response. And of course, it opened up the attack from others on that stage saying, oh, so before, when Obama does something that we like, you'll tie yourself to him. But then when he does something you know that we don't like, you will distance yourself from it. You can't really do that. Cory Booker made that point. You can't really distance yourself in some circumstances, but then attach yourself to the hip in other circumstances. Now, beyond that, I do not get why anyone on that stage spent so much time going after President Obama, unless the point of all of this is to say, if you are a moderate, you have no room in this party anymore. You have no spot. We are not helping bring you in. We're not going to engage with you. We're not going to invite you in. We're in fact going to push you out. Because President Obama within the Democratic Party has something like a 95% approval rating right now. Obama in this party, 95% of Democrats like him. They have a favorable view of him in some regard. He is seen, according to this panel, if we were to put up Obama against this panel, Obama would be a moderate. That's how far to the left these candidates have gone. And I do not understand why they think that's going to be the way to win this election. Everyone is talking about how dangerous the rhetoric of President Trump is, right? They say this rhetoric is, we got to return to what this country once stood for. And then they follow that up with far, far, far to the left policies, which this country never stood for. Cory Booker went after Joe Biden on criminal justice.
Sir, you are trying to shift the view from what you created. There are people right now in prison for life for drug offenses because you stood up and used that tough on crime phony rhetoric that got a lot of people elected but destroyed communities like mine. This isn't about the past, sir. This is about the present right now. I believe in redemption.
Thank you,
Senator. I'm happy you evolved.
I want to bring in
but
Secretary.
You offered no redemption to the people in prison right now.
I want to bring in Secretary.
He shouldn't be offering up any sort of redemption. Cory Booker wants you to believe that some dude who got caught smoking a joint has been sentenced to life in prison. That's not what actually happened. When we're talking about the serious, serious crimes that resulted in people spending a lot of time behind bars, we're not talking about the dude with the joint. We're talking about the dude who decided to sell heroin to children. That's what we're actually talking about in the vast majority of cases. It is certainly true that there were what we would now consider to be minor drug offenses that resulted in some jail time. That is absolutely true. But the way he talks about it is, oh man, this guy, no Dan, he's been in jail for the last 42 years. Oh my God, what did Dan do? He got caught one time smoking a joint. That's not happening. That's not happening at all.
I am happy to do that because all of the problems that he is talking about that he created, I actually led the bill that got passed into law that reverses the damage that your bills that you were, frankly, to correct you, Mr. Vice President, you were bragging, calling it the Biden crime bill up till 2015.
He did. And Joe Biden's going to have to deal with that during these primaries, because you've got a lot of progressives who do not believe in the rule of law. They want to let people go easily. See what's happening locally in Seattle. We don't want to enforce the law. Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes, King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg, they don't want to enforce the law. What do they want to do? They want to go easy on criminals. And what does that mean? It means bad guys are still out there. And there was a moment last night, maybe we'll play for it later on in the show, where Cory Booker does something like, you want to lock these criminals up, I want to lift them up. What a big baby. What a wimp. Hey, murderer, I want to lift you up. I don't want to lock you up. No, sorry. I'm going to lock up the bad guys. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-877. Did you know that KTGH has a smartphone app? Why is that important to download on your phone? Well, number one, it makes KTTH do better in the Apple Store or the Google Play Store. That means we get to expose our content to more people out there who maybe don't know we exist. But even better, when we've got breaking news, you'll get an alert. If you're getting out of the car at the exact moment that an interview you're dying to hear will start, you can stream the entire station, no matter where it is you are, on your phone. All you have to do is text the keyword APP to 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword APP to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So a man from Pasco is being called a hero because he helped save a stranger's life, not through breaking up a fight, not through getting involved during a robbery or carjacking or anything. This is a dude who donated bone marrow to a complete and utter stranger from Kansas City. This guy's name is Jason Piscini. He submitted a cheek swab to the National Bone Marrow Registry a few years ago because I guess he wants to tell us all how much of a good dude he is and how bad we are for not doing it.
There's no greater feeling than giving someone a second chance at life.
Okay, what about the feeling of finding $20 on the ground? That's a great feeling. I've never given bone marrow, so I don't know exactly how it feels. I'm told giving bone marrow actually hurts. So I feel like a better feeling is finding 20 bucks on the ground.
You're comparing $20 on the ground to helping save somebody's life.
Yeah.
No.
This is a feeling. How do you know? How many lives have you saved?
I'm about... this.
How many lives have you saved,
none
sir?
None yet, but this
exactly.
guy inspired me to go get that cheek swab.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
No, he
gonna
didn't.
Do it.
They found a perfect match for this guy's bone marrow. Perfect match, which, by the way, he tells Como News, is incredibly rare.
More often than not, most people don't ever match with anyone, even including a family member, so it's very rare.
Is it? Go with me for a second. Just for a second. Cynical Jace, go with me for a moment.
I'll try.
Is it possible, because this is something that I think I would do if I knew that it was very rare to actually get the match, that he did it not thinking he would ever find a match, also he can put on his Tinder profile, oh, I'm a bone marrow donator. Like, I give out bone marrow all the time. I'm a hero. Is that possible? Because I would do that just for the... because I'm a bad person.
That's possible.
I would do it totally for the... And then at this point, maybe he got a date or two, and he's getting into a serious relationship with someone who was all like, oh, you're such a good dude. You would totally donate to a stranger? Yes, I would. And then they're getting really serious, and then we find out that he's got the match, and now if he doesn't allow the bone marrow transplant to take place, she'd be all like, you're a liar, and leave him. In my head, that's because I don't like acknowledging that people are good.
He seems like a good guy.
You think he's just a good guy? Good for him.
Good for him, absolutely. What's wrong with that?
I would totally...
I mean, if he was going to go to that extent for the Tinder
the
profile
date, yeah,
then why wouldn't you just say you're an organ donor on your driver's license? It's just as easy.
Yeah, because especially in that point, you're dead at that point. Like, if you're having to give away your organs, you're going to be dead, so it doesn't matter what's going on your Tinder profile. I'm just going to put on my Tinder profile that I donated to the bone marrow transplant thingy, and I'm not going to do it, but I'll get the special kudos for being such a selfless person. And no, and I'll never have to prove myself because, well, first of all, you just said you're doing a swab, although now I'm going to ask you for actual proof of this. Most people won't say, oh, you did? Prove it. Prove it, Jason. Now, for producer Rob, I'm asking you to prove it. So
I'm
next
doubling
week.
Doubling down. Now I'm,
next week, you bring
sure
in that receipt.
Yep.
You give me some sort of, I want like an Instagram story going into the, don't try to Photoshop this. I want it all documented.
Fair.
All fine. Documented.
Fine.
And if you don't do it, public shaming.
Fair. I'm in.
On the other hand, I've already done it.
Yeah.
I did this months and months and months ago.
No, you didn't.
I 100% did.
You have proof? Where's the receipt?
I don't have it anymore.
Oh,
I didn't realize
convenient.
That you were going to be such a jerk
convenient.
And call me out on my good deeds. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
Yeah, I wish we could have followed up, like, a good person story with another good person story just to get in a good mood on this Thursday evening afternoon. But we're not going to because of it's a story about AOC. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is basically defending violence against political opponents, something that if Trump did, it would lead to an impeachment hearing this morning. If Donald Trump gave the same exact interview that AOC just gave to a New York radio show called Ebro in the Morning, 100% there would be calls for impeachment right this second.
Like, once someone doesn't have access to clean water, they have no choice but to riot, right? So, and
is that true? I mean, no choice but to riot, because in Flint, Michigan, where they did not have access to clean water, you know what they didn't do? Riot.
It doesn't have to be that way. And I'm not even talking about, like, I'm not even talking about Palestinians. I'm talking about people, communities in poverty in the United States. Yeah. I'm talking about Latin America. I'm talking about, like, all over the world. Yeah. And, you know, social destabilization is what happens when people do not have a plan or feel like there's no vision for their future.
Well, they don't feel safe and they don't feel protected either, and they don't feel like anybody's speaking for them.
So when you actually break this down and you compare what she said to her actual beliefs, the only communities not marginalized are heterosexual Christians and just Jews. You can be a gay Jew, you can be an Orthodox or Reform, you're not a marginalized community, you're just a white dude, and heterosexual Christians. So everybody else, she's basically saying, yes, you are justified in some of your violence. That's what she's clearly implying here. Now, she's basically, in this case, arguing on the side of Palestinian terrorists attacking Israel. Because, again, listen to the context in which this is pursued.
If you critique any other country, they don't say, do you believe in Britain's right to exist? And I understand that there's a very deep history. There's a reason why we ask that question.
Okay, but you literally just contradicted yourself. You just contradicted yourself. There's no you never hear people say, does Britain have the right to exist? And she uses that as her point to say, well, why are we asking that about Israel? It seems weird that you're having to ask that question. You're putting me on the defensive. But then she immediately follows up it by saying, yeah, well, I know the history.
When it comes to Israel, because Jewish people have been persecuted throughout all of human history.
Thank you.
I don't think that by marginalizing Palestinians, you create safety.
Okay, so she doesn't know what she's talking about. She has no clue what it is she's talking about. And the way she talks about Israel and the way she talks about Palestine, which she thinks exists, it does not exist, shows you how little she knows about this and how she's being led by her anti-Semitic views. Israel defending itself against Hamas terrorists, yes, they are terrorists, lobbing missiles into their land with the intent of killing Jews, with the intent of wiping Israel off the face of this earth. That is not marginalizing anybody. That's called self-defense. If Canada decided to lob bombs into Washington State, we would fight back. In fact, we would show way less regard for Canadians than Israel is considering for the folks who live on the Gaza Strip, for example. This is absolute lunacy.
I think, too, country when it comes to Israel-Palestine is very much a generational issue.
And by the way, this I agree with. There's a generation who is a little bit older than AOC that knows what, in fact, they're talking about. And then there are people like AOC who's not very smart.
And I think that when we start looking at it through that lens, a lot of this stuff starts to make sense. Like what you're talking about, young Jews in Israel are sick of this. Like the Netanyahu administration is very much like the Trump administration.
Yes.
And there's this idea that if you criticize a policy of Israel, you know, the right wants to advance this notion that if you engage in critique of Israeli policy, that you are anti-Semitic.
Name a single policy that AOC has criticized, that Rashida Tlaib has criticized, has any of the squad members, Ilhan Omar, name a policy that they criticize. They don't. They talk about Jews using stereotypes, using offensive caricatures. They accuse American Jews of having dual loyalty. That's not a policy that she is attacking. So let's be clear about that. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. To the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. Round two of the two-night Democratic debate reminded us last night that, gosh, they are so out of touch. The top-tier candidates are out of touch with the rest of us. Joining me on the line to analyze the disaster is our friend Michael Knowles. He's host of the Michael Knowles Show over at DailyWire.com. Michael, thank you so much for coming on.
Jason, thanks for having me.
So last night, they all seemed to gang up on Joe Biden. Was that a smart move?
Well, I think really what they need to do is gang up on Marianne Williamson, because she's going to summon all of those dark psychic forces, and she's going to expel all of them into the outer darkness. Joe Biden, you know, it's funny. She made the smartest line of the night. She had the most insightful line of the night. She said that all of this wonkiness wasn't going to help the Democrats win because the American people want to hear big ideas. She said that there's a dark psychic force in our politics. So this is simply a true statement about the cultural and religious underpinnings of our political views. And then she said, if the Democrats don't change something, Trump is going to win. And this is the real issue with the Biden attacks. As of right now, Joe Biden is polling the best. He seems to have the best shot of beating Donald Trump. He's stumbling on his own. He seems a little tired. He seems a little confused. He doesn't know the difference between a text message and a URL, a web address. But Joe Biden doesn't seem to be the real substance of this primary. The real substance you saw in debates over trade between Tulsi Gabbard and the rest of her party. You saw it in debates over crime between actually, once again, Tulsi Gabbard and Kamala Harris. I mean, these are the real issues that they've got to flesh out. You saw it even in the debates over health care between, say, John Hickenlooper or John Delaney, the slightly more moderate wing of the party, and Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, who want to give away zillions of dollars of your taxpayer money to pay for health care for everybody. But those are the substantive debates that really the purpose of the primary is to flesh them out and pick the most electable candidate. They weren't doing that. They're going after Joe Biden because his poll numbers are high. I think in the short term, maybe it gives one of them a boost. But in the long term, that's not going to be a winning strategy for the party as a whole.
Well, let's talk about the Medicare for All plan, which basically Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and Kamala Harris all basically share. It seems roundly derided by the progressive pundits who know that, number one, it's not practical, and number two, it's too expensive, and yet they won't admit, Bernie Sanders aside, that they're taking away your health insurance coverage, your private coverage, and they're going to tax you.
That's right. It's not practical. It's too expensive. And probably most importantly for these guys, it's extremely unpopular. Yeah. 80% of Americans are happy with their health insurance. If you like your doctor, you should be allowed to keep your doctor. I mean, that was the great debacle of Obamacare. And it shows you a little bit the lie of leftism. We were told in 2009, you need to pass Obamacare, then we'll have universal health care, then everything will be hunky-dory. It came to pass. It was extremely unpopular. The Democrats lost 1,000 seats around the country because of that unpopular bill. And now we hear the same song again. I guess Obamacare didn't work because we need a new universal health care plan, this time even bigger, this time even more coercive, this time even more expensive. It could take up to 150 million people off their current health insurance. That is a losing proposition in a general election. But they've embraced other unpopular positions. They've embraced reparations for the great-great-great-great-grandchildren of black slaves. That has 29% support. Over two-thirds of Americans oppose that idea. They have endorsed health care for illegal aliens. They've endorsed practical open borders, decriminalizing illegal border crossings. They're even now protesting the American flag, the country itself. It's almost as though they are crafting the least popular possible party platform going into 2020. It's Marianne Williamson again had this right. If they don't change their strategy quickly, it's very difficult to see how any of them is going to beat Trump in 2020.
Just joining me, we're talking with Michael Knowles. He's the host of the Michael Knowles Show. You can download it wherever you get your podcasts, or, of course, at dailywire.com. What is rather amusing here is Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, he knows that these policies are unpopular. He knows that they're going down the whole rabbit hole of socialism, and they're getting dangerously close from just all saying they're socialists. And that's why it's funny when I hear him on MSNBC say, oh, those are just labels. That's a Republican talking point. We're not socialists. Yes, they are. Do I think everybody on those stages, the stage over the course of the two nights, is a socialist? No, but they're clearly going, their top tier candidates, Biden aside, are clearly more in that area than not.
And this is the key point to all of this, because we keep talking about the debates as the socialists versus the slightly more I even say moderate with a, you got to take it with a grain of salt because they're not that moderate. But that's the divide. Really, the divide is between the top tier candidates and the bottom tier candidates. And as a rule, the top tier candidates are the more radical, more socialist candidates. And the bottom tier candidates are the guys like John Hickenlooper or Steve Bullock or all these other people that you've never heard of who are far more moderate. And even when you get into candidates like Pete Buttigieg, who is far more extreme than he's letting on, or even Joe Biden, who isn't so much extreme as unprincipled and willing to say whatever it takes to get elected, you can tell which way the party is going by which way they are leaning. And those candidates are all leaning left right now. They're seeing that the political future in that party is to the hard left, is to spending trillions of dollars on student loan forgiveness, on health care programs for illegal aliens, so on and so forth. And the trouble for them is that even if it does get them through the Democratic primary, it's very hard to see how at a national level they could win. Let's not forget, about 1 in 5 people in this country identifies as a progressive. That 2 in 5 identify as a conservative. The rest are somewhere in the middle, moderate, centrist, independent, whatever label you want. And tacking to the hard left, tacking towards socialism, is basically a guarantee of defeat in November.
How much damage did Tulsi Gabbard do to Kamala Harris, who, you know, she got destroyed according to Twitter, just sort of reminding the progressive base how hard Kamala Harris was on communities of color when she was the attorney general in California?
I think the indicator for these elections, obviously beginning with Donald Trump and moving forward, is how the internet memes react to these debates. And in particular, with that moment, that interaction between Tulsi and Kamala Harris, the memes immediately sprung up that Kamala is a cop, that she's a crooked cop, that she's a dirty cop, all these images of her laughing as, you know, children are being arrested. That was the cultural reaction to that exchange, and it presents a real problem for Kamala Harris, because her entire career is as a prosecutor. She graduates law school, she's a prosecutor, she becomes the Attorney General of California, she's in the Senate for 5 minutes, and then she runs for president. If she's going to run on her record, all she can run on is her time as a prosecutor. When she first launched her campaign, she didn't talk about it. Then she embraced it. She said, we're going to prosecute the case against Donald Trump. Now she's leaning away again. Her only chance is to embrace it, talk about how it was a good thing to bring down crime, talk about how we need law and order. Let's not forget, according to Gallup polling, the police are the third most popular institution in the entire country, just behind small business and the military. If she owns it, if she shows that she's got a little fight in her, I think that she'll be able to survive that Democratic presidential primary. If she surrenders the premise that the cops are bad, that law enforcement is bad, then she's got nowhere to go, because it totally takes off the table her entire career.
Yeah. So, no cheating on this question. Biggest loser, biggest winner, go. Can't say Donald Trump was the biggest winner. You can't say America was the biggest loser.
Fair enough. The biggest loser was Joe Biden. A close second would be Elizabeth Warren, because I think she failed to keep up the momentum that she had going. But Joe Biden is the biggest loser. He could barely finish his sentences. He was stumbling over himself. He couldn't answer attacks as well as he needs to keep his real strong front runner status. it was pretty pathetic. I mean, even at the end, when he said 4 more years of Trump is fine, but 8 more years is terrible, I guess he doesn't know that the Constitution only limits Trump to 4 more years anyway, so I guess we're all good. I think he's the big loser. The big winner, Tulsi kind of shot up a little bit. Kamala shot up a little bit. I actually think, though, I'm going to go out on a limb here, the big winner of the debate was that new age kook, Marianne Williamson. She did. She made herself a central figure here. She said some crazy things, but she articulated, actually, a lot of true sentiments about the party. I think she has elevated herself. She's elevated her name identification, and I think she's going to get a more central role in the next debate. Does that mean she's going to get the nomination? I think it's pretty unlikely, but we've got 10 more of these debates to go. So if she can keep herself in the conversation, I think it's a big win.
Well, and she's got to make it to the next debate, and that's really what this is all about, because as of right now, there are only 7 candidates, all the top names, who have, you know, right now officially made it into the next debate. She's got about a month to do it. She got until the 28th of August to figure out if she can get to that 2% mark in at least 4 polls. It's not going to be easy, but a lot of people are talking about her, if not ironically. They are, in fact, talking about her. I've been talking with Michael Knowles. He's the host of The Michael Knowles Show. You can download it at dailywire.com or get it wherever you get podcasts. Michael, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Jason, great to be here.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rance Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. When it comes to homelessness in the city of Seattle, incumbent Councilmember Lisa Herbold of West Seattle, she's been a thorn in the side of the team that was tasked with connecting the homeless with resources and cleaning up these encampments on the street, filled with human waste, used needles, garbage. And now that her record is in the spotlight because she's running for re-election, she is trying to pretend votes she took, positions she took, didn't actually happen. So there's a group called People for Seattle. It's a progressive group, but they're sick and tired of this current council. This is a group that's founded by a former council member in Tim Burgess. And they are targeting Lisa Herbold's district because when she ran the first time, she won by only 36 votes. And so they sent out a mailer. They called her someone who's failing Seattle with her divisive politics, excuses, and bad decisions. And among them, they say in this mailer, Herbold voted to cut funding for the navigation team tasked with reducing homeless camps. Now, Herbold has since said, according to KUOW, quote, "The fact is that I have never voted to cut funding for navigation teams." That's 100% incorrect. That is demonstrably false. It's literally on video on the city of Seattle's website. And I remember this specifically because we talked about it at the time. I wrote about it on our blog at KTTH at the time. Back in November of last year, the council decided to cut about $500,000 in the first year for the navigation team. That money was tasked to go to staff members of the navigation team. The navigation team is the group of SPD officers and HSD employees, Human Services Department. These are social workers who go out to these encampments, work with people for months sometimes, trying to get them into shelter, get them off the street. And these are the people who give the 72 hours notice, or sometimes less, depending on the situation, saying, hey, we're cleaning this stuff up. Take us up on our services, or I'm sorry, we're going to have to clear you. Now, apparently, that's not what Lisa Herbold wants. So she decided to cut, to vote to cut those specific team members and then lie about it. Because she knows that right now, a lot of people in Seattle support the navigation team and the work that they're doing. Even if they don't even know what the navigation team is, they support the work of cleaning up these encampments. And this got me thinking about her role in homelessness. I started looking into this story a while ago, in fact. In fact, I've been told by many staffers with the city that they think Lisa Herbold has not been supportive of the department's efforts to clean up the homeless encampments. And so then I started to look into emails, because all of this is public record. I put in a public disclosure request for emails, and boy, did I find some fun stuff, including the fact that for months She has been nitpicking at the navigation team, giving them all sorts of data homework, all with the intent of stalling the navigation team from committing these encampments. Repeatedly, in emails, Lisa Herbold was trying to get the navigation team to stop their cleanups. She apparently believes it easier to better connect these folks to resources by letting them stay on the streets and not sweeping them into an encampment, or excuse me, into a shelter. She wants them on the streets. She thinks that's easier to get them help. Now, the experts say that's not the case. The experts say the faster you can get them off of the streets and into shelter, into resources, the better it is for them. The experts think one thing. Lisa Herbold thinks something else because she's an ideologue. She aligns herself with Shama Sawant. She aligns herself with Mike O'Brien. They are against the sweeps. They find it inhumane to move people from situations out on the street, in parks, in alleyways, on sidewalks, where they're living in their own filth. She actually finds that move to lack compassion. And she called out the navigation team many times because she was trying to argue that all we would need to do for the city is to clean up these encampments so they're not in unhealthy positions, which then means we can't sweep them away and put them into shelter. So over and over and over again, she says that, hey, navigation team, this is what you're not doing. You're not cleaning up the garbage. You'll do litter pickups every once in a while, but you're not really mitigating the public health impacts that you're using to justify these encampments. Now, the nav team, they come back and email after email after email saying, that's what you're saying is just not true. Now, I've got the emails up right now at ktth.com. In fact, if you text the keyword rants, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you the link to this story so you can read it. Now, this is happening at a time where this entire city seems upset with the direction that we're going, especially as it relates to homelessness. She's running against two really strong candidates who have what it takes to clean up this mess that we're in, a mess that she is partly responsible for. And so for those of you who don't actually live in Seattle or in her district, who know the dangers of bad policy spreading past Seattle into your neighborhoods, for those of you who don't really know anyone who lives in Seattle, you can still help by shining a spotlight on this story. Because if you post my blog on your Facebook page or your Twitter feed or your LinkedIn account, maybe one of your friends who knows someone in Seattle will retweet or like or share. And then it gets in front of eyeballs so this can actually make a difference. We have until next week to win this primary. Lisa Herbold should not be on this council. Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you this story to read, but more importantly, I need you to also share it. It is time to take back Seattle. And we can do that by putting a spotlight on their incompetence. They are not on the right side of this issue. And more importantly, they're not on your side. They're on their own. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. You are listening to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH.